Time now on WRJN for a sponsored conversation with Attorney John Cabranes of the Cabranes Law Office in Racine. Attorney Cabranes is here to talk about and answer legal questions. For 20 years, Cabranes Law Office in Racine has specialized in traffic law, including OWIs, immigration, family law, and criminal defense issues. And now John Cabranes is here on WRJN to talk with you, our listeners. In a few moments, we'll be giving you the number if you'd like to call in.
Well, good afternoon. This is the Cabranes Law Hour here on AM 1400 WRJN. Lou Turner filling in for Glenn Klein, who's been on vacation, it seems like, a long, long time. Not quite as verbose as Glenn, but we will get through it. We'll take your phone calls, too. If you want to call Attorney Cabranes, just write at his office and do it privately. 638-0529. His number again, 638-0529. We here at WRJN, 634-9756 or 634-WRJN. Attorney Cabranes, how you doing? Welcome
good.
Back.
Good. How are you?
I am well. Well, I'm getting over a little cold, but, you know, can't complain.
It's that time of year with all the weather changes, and it's gotten cold and rainy, and it's this cold, flu, and pneumonia season.
It is, but hopefully nothing that bad. And we have some lovely guests. I'm not even going to try the names because I'm not – it is – hold on. Is it Shanez Lakdawala?
That is correct.
All right.
And that is me.
Yay me. That is you. And to your left, it doesn't matter at home, but –
Jordan Schrader.
Jordan Schrader, yeah. Thanks, and welcome back. I know I've seen you guys plenty of times, but here we are. What's on the docket today, attorney?
Well, today we have no guests, so you get to talk to us in all of our living color. We'll talk about a little bit about the things that we do, the things that we experience, the things that you should be aware of. In particular on the agenda today, we're going to talk a little bit about landlord-tenant stuff, we're going to talk about some family law stuff, and we're going to talk about my favorite topic, which is guns.
Guns.
Guns, and specifically,
boom.
That's right, boom, and specifically, you know, geared to all of those of you who have concealed carry permits. I'd love to hear from you guys. Even those of you who think that concealed carry is a bad idea, love to hear from you guys. But, the bottom line is that I am one of the attorneys in the Armed Citizen Legal Defense Network, and those folks are one of the organizations that if you ever have the misfortune of having to pull out a gun and shoot somebody, you are clearly in some legal hot water, potentially legal hot water. So if you're a member of that organization, they will provide you. It's kind of like homeowners insurance for people who have concealed carry weapons.
Mm-hmm.
They'll make sure that you have an attorney there to represent you. And I've been part of that network for about 3 years now, and have some knowledge and experience in the laws regarding that area. But I'm not going to hog up the show today because I've got two lovely ladies here, Jordan and Shanaz. Jordan and Shanaz are, we don't hear from them enough on this show. We hear me.
Last week, not so much at all.
Yeah, last week, not so much at all is right. But Jordan, tell us about your week and tell us a little bit about landlord-tenant and, more importantly, what happens if you have a landlord who sells the property to another person, and then what are the pitfalls of having that second landlord then try to enforce his rights?
Sure. So this is for both landlords and those who are on the leases, because it's important for you to know, too. If you own a property and you sell it to someone, you're obviously selling them the property. But if you have a lease and you try and give that lease over to the other person, it doesn't work unless it says so specifically in the lease. So if you buy a property and there is a lease, make sure that either it says it in there or you start a new lease with the tenants. Tenants, make sure that you're getting on a new lease so that you know what your obligations are as well.
So right. as the tenant, can you expect exactly what you were getting from the previous owner when it switches hands, or you go back to the drawing board as far as your rights and stuff like that?
It's going to depend on what the lease says itself. If it says in there that it's going to be assigned to the next person who takes ownership of the house, if that happens, then you're still on the hook for everything on that lease. If it doesn't say anything at all, you're back to the drawing board.
Yeah, okay. Most landlord-tenant leases, at least the Wisconsin Realtors Association has leases, I think pre-drafted leases where you just fill in the blanks on these things. And there are also forms that you can purchase. And most of those leases will talk about the ability for one landlord to assign that lease to another individual. The problem comes in if the document is silent on that issue. There's something the law basically says that you have to have an interest in the dispute in order for you to be able to collect, and it's called privity of contract. And if you don't have an interest in that, if you don't have privity of contract, then you can't get paid if there is a problem down the line, because you're not part of that contract. Mm-hmm. You know, the key, and I think Jordan was addressing that issue, the key is that, you know, if you're the tenant and the landlord comes to you and says, well, I want you to sign this lease, honestly, if I'm the tenant under those circumstances, the first question out of my mouth is, what's in it for me? Because I don't have to sign anything. I already signed the lease. I'm good to go. You know, from the landlord's perspective, they may want you to sign another lease. They may want to put their name on the lease and have you, you know, abide by the new terms and conditions. But you don't have to do that. And you don't have to do that till the lease expires. So as a landlord, you take on a certain amount of risk. Mm-hmm. If you buy a rental property and you've got a situation where the original lease doesn't talk about anything about the transfer or assigning the lease to some other third party.
Yeah, I'm interested in this because my daughter's a college student, and it's kind of a racket what they do with the student housing, apartments, and stuff like that. And she was in an apartment, and that home was sold. So she's still there. They had to give them a call if they wanted to come. They could look at the property anytime they wanted to, all that kind of stuff. But then the new owners wanted to see it right away, and she felt, well, this doesn't seem right. They gave me like a half hour to, I don't know what she had to hide. I don't want to know. But she was a little bit, you know, hazy on you know, her rights.
Well, they got to give you advance notice. Half an hour is not nearly enough advance notice. I think most...
Well, it's college kids. You blow it by them. Yeah, half hour will be there.
I think
be
it's
ready.
Generally 12 hours to or 24 hours is the...
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Let me tell you my experience in law school, my first landlord-tenant experience in law school. And Shannon Whitworth, if you're listening, you know what I'm talking about. My first summer in law school, I worked for what was referred to as a public interest law firm. And so I learned a lot about how to answer complaints and things like that. And what had happened is a very good friend of mine, former partner, law partner of mine, he and three other people sublet an apartment from some other students. And apparently they were paying the students, but the students weren't paying the person who actually owned the premises.
Okay.
And so what the guy who owned the premises did was he sued not only the people that he had leased the apartment to, but he sued for back rent and damages. He sued the people who were subletting. And what's interesting about that is, of course, that there was actually a clause in the contract that said that you had to let the landlord know, and he had to approve the sublease, and none of that ever apparently ever happened. So he gets sued one day, and he starts to freak out, and I, as a newly minted first-year law student decided,
you're ready to go.
I'm ready to go.
Yeah,
I'm just bring it. Just bring it. I got all my guns and I'm ready to go.
With your weeks of experience.
With my less than weeks of experience. Okay, and this is a classic case of God protects children and fools. I'll let you determine which one of those I was. But we answered this small claims complaint, which if you've ever looked at a small claims complaint for eviction, it's usually a one-page complaint with a lease attached. I'm not joking when I say we had like a 15-page answer to that, countersuing for on a number of issues, filing a bunch of civil defenses. But, you know, we created so much havoc, he and I, and created, I guess, enough concern in the landlord that the landlord basically dumped the subletters off of the lawsuit and went after the people that he had actually had the lease with. And one of the issues, I remember, and this is why I bring this up, but one of the issues, in fact, was the issue of privity of contract, because he didn't have a contract with Shannon or the other individuals. He had a contract with the other people who had walked away and sublet that apartment to these folks. And so, you know, we accused him, among other things, of filing a frivolous complaint, which could have left him open to some damages and things like that. So, you know, I have 20 years of experience as a lawyer and landlord-tenant. I've got 22 years of experience, apparently, in litigating these things. So,
you'd like to jump in on the 634-9756, 634-WRJN. This is the Cabranes Law Hour, and right now we're talking about tenants and rights and all that stuff.
Yeah. So do you have anything else to add, Jordan, on that issue?
Ooh, not at this time, no.
Well, Shanaz,
it sounded lawyerly. Not at this time.
Not at this time. Thank you, Your Honor. I have nothing further.
Very good.
I was going to say I have been lucky enough not to have any issues personally with landlords, so, and I don't have any tenants, so it's all. I've been lucky.
Yeah, me too. And I've rented, and it's been wonderful. In every one that I've rented, so I am lucky.
You have rented as a landlord, or have you rented as a renter?
I have rented as a renter.
Okay. I can tell you, I can speak from experience as a landlord, that experience left a lot to be desired.
I bet it's a lot harder than people think it is, and a lot more going on.
It is, and you know, the landlords in particular have certain obligations, especially when your tenants move out. You usually, as a general rule, take in a security deposit. And there is a 21-day letter that has to be sent out, and it has to be sent out within 21 days.
When is this letter? This is
after they move out.
After they move out.
Yeah. So Let's say your tenancy expires on September 30th today.
All right.
Okay. I've got until the 21st of October to send you a letter, and that letter will contain one of two things. One of two things. Either a check, or an itemized list of the damages that you've left behind and what it's going to cost me to repair it. And if there's any money left out of that security deposit, then I got to send you the balance of that check. The problem is this. A lot of people don't do that. Or even worse than that, what I've encountered over the years is I've got a lot of landlords that are unscrupulous and basically say, you know, we're going to charge you for everything that we conceivably can charge you for, and we're going to keep your security deposit. And in some cases, by the way, you owe us another $200 on top.
Right.
You know, the problem is that you can't charge for normal wear and tear, and you have to be able to demonstrate that these are actually legitimate damages. And that's from the landlord who are aware of the 21-day letter. You know, they try these abusive practices. You can actually contest that, and you can actually, if you can show that they're submitting essentially puffed up claims of damages, you might even be able to get actual attorney's fees involved in collecting from the landlord for unfairly withholding your security deposit. But it's even worse if they don't send you the 21-day letter, because if they don't send you the 21-day letter, what happens is that you can then countersue them for violating the administrative code, which requires them to do that, and the penalty is double the security deposit plus attorney's fees. And so it can become real expensive for a novice landlord who doesn't know what they're doing if they screw that up.
Does the average renter know about this stuff? I mean, they should. You should always read everything. Yeah. But I'd have to think no. I know my daughter certainly doesn't.
Yeah,
hope for the best.
Yeah. As a general rule, most people don't know what their rights are. You know, landlords don't know the laws that they need to comply with. Let me rephrase that. Smaller landlords don't know the laws that they need to comply with. Tenants, as a general rule, it depends on the type of tenant you are, because you have some people, you have long-term tenants, responsible
right.
people, and as a general rule, they've never actually had to deal with a lot of this security deposit stuff. And then you have the other type of tenants that seems like every 3-4 months they're moving into another place, and then you kind of wonder why that is in the first place. Is it because they're being evicted? You know, there is a, for those of you who are smaller landlords, you can go to a website. It's WCCA.com. Is it WisconsinCourts.gov?
Yeah.
And it's CCAP. If you Google WCCAP, you'll come up with the Wisconsin Circuit Court Access Program. And all you have to do is, if you have a rental application, type in that person's name into the program. And if they've been evicted before,
that's all public knowledge.
It's all public record. And so, you know, as a landlord, as a former landlord, because I got tired of it, as a former landlord, I can tell you that that is a great tool to use, because, you know, let's face it, the past is certainly an indicator as to what the future might be.
Right.
And if you've got a person who is applying to rent your place and they've been evicted for non-payment of rent, you know, 3 times in the last 2 years, chances are that you're not going to get paid somewhere down the line. And the problem, you know, anybody feel too sorry for the renters who get evicted, you know, I look at it not only from the renter standpoint, but I can look at it from the landlord standpoint. He's got a mortgage. He's paying on
this
property.
This is a living. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's paying on this property. And when the tenant isn't paying him, then not only is he out the rent, but he's out the mortgage too, because he can't then make the mortgage payment.
Right.
So, you know, it creates a problem for everybody involved.
It seems like the landlord is just almost a negative connotation as soon as it comes out of your mouth, the landlord. But they're probably the vast majority of great people, business people.
You know, there are the occasional rotten apples.
Sure.
There's a couple that are famous in Racine. We're not going to mention names or anything like that, but mm-hmm. but you see them in court. In Racine, eviction court is generally on Monday, and so Monday mornings, 8:30 in the morning, you see the same crew coming in, evicting people, and then you see the same the tenants arguing the same things. Well, you know, he didn't come in and fix the property. He didn't do this, didn't do that, and for the tenants out there who are involved in this, and I'm hogging up the show again, so ladies, jump in whenever you feel that you have something to contribute.
Yeah, and anybody has something to contribute listening in, give us a call, 634-9756. It's the Cabranes Law Hour on WRGN. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people must have experience in this on these issues. Everybody's got to live somewhere.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, what happens is if you have a landlord that doesn't do what they're supposed to do, you've got broken windows, and it's November, December, and you're having to put up cardboard on your windows to stop the wind from coming through, you know, stuff like that. You can withhold rent, okay? But here's the deal with withholding rent. You just can't go out and say, I'm just not going to pay you. I'm going to spend it on something else. You got to put that money away in an account, because when you go to court and you say to the judge, I withheld rent because he wasn't doing X, Y, or Z. One of the first questions you're going to get asked by the judge is, well, did you segregate that money in a separate account? Do you have that money that you can pay him now if he does the work? If the answer is no, they're not going to pay any attention to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The other thing is sometimes what happens with a tenant is that they will call the building of safety. Let's say the situation with the windows. All of a sudden in November the heater stops working and the landlord doesn't move on the issue, and now you're facing winter and you've got no heat in your house. You call building and safety, and then they come in and they will issue a warning to the landlord, and then the landlord turns around and evicts you. Okay, well, under those circumstances, you can come into court and you can tell the judge, this was a retaliation for making my complaint. And that's actually a defense. Retaliatory eviction is a defense to an eviction. They can't get you out if the reason they're getting you out is in retaliation for making those reports.
So if people that are renting or listening, it sounds like anytime you go by the book and call these agencies, that's also another paper trail, another said they did this, they did this, they did this, and something if you do end up in court, which I hope you don't, you've got all your ammunition in a row.
And that is actually the nub of what, you know, a good client for a lawyer is a client that has a paper trail, that has created a paper trail. I have said it, and I'm sure Jordan and Shanaz have heard me say it more than once. If it's not in writing, it doesn't exist.
And not just on your cell phone. You can't just take your cell phone into court. It has to be on paper.
Really? Like pictures of damages, that sort of thing? Or
well, text messages, too, for example. You know, there's
pictures of documents, I suppose?
Well, you can try pictures of documents, but, you know, there is actually a statute that says that, they're not going to take your phone into evidence, okay? Because, remember, you can always appeal any determination. So if you want to bring in your phone and your phone has some text messages or some pictures or some other documents on the phone, the judge isn't going to take your phone from you and put it in the file. It's not going to happen. You got to have a print
out
of
that. Or swipe through about 50 photos.
Yeah.
Keep going. They're after these.
I don't think you want that to happen either.
No, you wouldn't.
Yeah. Well, especially some of the ones that we've seen. So be prepared. The Legal Aid Society used to have, I don't know if they still do, they used to have a pamphlet for renters on the renters' rights. I don't know if there's an equivalent for landlords. I think the Wisconsin Realtors Association has something for landlords, but I'm not entirely sure. As you've heard us say every week on this show, consultations at the Cabranes Law Offices are absolutely free. We give you half an hour. We don't charge you a dime. And if you want to talk about, you know, my landlord, is this, that, and the other thing, or if you're a landlord and you want to get the tenant out and you're not sure how to do it, come and talk to us. We'll give you half an hour free. If you want to hire us after that, we'll talk to you about what it's going to cost you.
I would guess you see people, and by the way, that number 6380529, some people come in all with a head of steam, and you say, well, do you have this? Do you have this? Do you have that? And they just would kind of wilt back down and realize they're not really ready to go to court or really do anything.
Well, that's
why they're talking to you.
That's one type of person.
Yeah.
Then there's the other person who becomes enraged when you tell them that, you know, you have a lack of evidence.
Don't have a leg to stand on.
Well,
what are you talking about?
Well, it's not that you don't have a leg to stand on, because let's face it, you always have a shot. It may not be a good shot, but it's a shot. There are certain things that you can do in advance that increase your odds and can increase your odds dramatically of prevailing in litigation. But the bottom line is that, you know, there are some people who come in and say, okay, this is what I need, this is what I want done, and I've got all this stuff. Great, I love those people.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who don't have all the stuff together, and then you tell them, okay, you sit down with them, and you tell them, okay, this is what you need to get together.
Yeah, give them some homework.
Right, you give them some homework, and mm-hmm. they go out, and they take care of it, and they come back and see you, and then we're ready to roll, okay? And there are those people who basically think that, this is the way I think that I want to do it, and I know that you're the lawyer and you went to law school, but but this is the way I feel that it should happen. They proceed on
the dreamers
on that. Well, yeah, that's one way of referring to them. I wouldn't call them a dream, more of a nightmare. But yeah. But you know, you have fortunately they're a smaller percentage. Most people realize that you're trying to help.
And they come to you.
Well, yeah.
I mean, most people say, help me.
Well, but I'll tell you that sometimes people come to you and they have this vision of, I'm trying to remember who, Kukla Freinanali. Kukla Freinanali.
It's been a while.
Yeah. For those of you who...
I bet you two don't remember that at all.
They have no idea who we're talking about.
No.
Kukla Freinanali.
Puppets.
Puppets, mm-hmm. That's right. And they were sock puppets, actually. More sock puppetish.
And a little violent.
They were. But sometimes what happens is people come in and think that we are one of the sock puppets. And that what they're going to do is they're going to just put the words in our mouth and we're going to say them, no matter how ridiculous those words are.
Right.
And that's where, you know, those clients can become a little more difficult because they have to understand that, you know, we're going to do everything we can for you and we're going to do everything we can to bring, you know, your position out in front of the judge. But there are just some things that we're just not going to do. We're not going to violate the law. We're not going to be unethical about it. We're not going to talk about the fact that, you know, the tenant, even though the tenant hasn't paid you, you know, his wife is sleeping with the milkman. You know, that has nothing to do with the non-payment of rent.
Yes, making you emotional. It doesn't have any outcome whatsoever.
Right, right. We're not going to deviate from the purpose that we're trying to do, which is, you know, get the renter out or get some money out of the landlord.
And this is a great time for a break. We are a little late for news here. We need to jump out for just a second. This is the Cabranes Law Hour with Attorney Cabranes in the studio, 634-9756. That's our phone number here. Give us a call, 638-0529, if you'd like to contact Attorney Cabranes on your own. You do that. Right now we're going to check news. Tom Carco coming up. Stick with us on AM 1400 WRJN.
Time now on WRJN for a sponsored conversation with Attorney John Cabranes of the Cabranes Law Office in Racine. Attorney Cabranes is here to talk about and answer legal questions. For 20 years, Cabranes Law Office in Racine has specialized in traffic law, including OWIs, immigration, family law, and criminal defense issues. And now John Cabranes is here on WRJN to talk with you, our listeners. In a few moments, we'll be giving you the number if you'd like to call in.
This is the Cabranes Law Hour. Feel free to join the conversation, 634-9756. That's 634-9756. If you'd like to contact Attorney Cabranes privately, call his office at 638-0529. This program is brought to you by Cabranes Law Office, LLC. No attorney-client relationship is being created. This show is intended to provide legal information, not legal advice. The attorneys have neither the time nor the information during the show to fully review your particular legal issue. Be aware that in some cases, time limits may apply in the prosecution of your case, and you should seek legal assistance as soon as possible. Cabranes Law Offices, LLC, makes no representation that the information provided today has specific application to your particular legal issue. Again, the phone number here is 634-9756. We are back with Attorney Cabranes. Let me take a crack at these. Shanaz Lakdawala?
Shanaz, yes.
Shanaz, I got it. And Jordan Schrader.
Yes.
All right. I'm almost there. I'll get good at this, then Glenn will be back. Welcome back to the hour. Take it away.
Well, I think we've heard far too much of Jordan already.
Just like you do every week.
Attorney Cabranes can't get a word in here.
Yeah, I know.
That never happens.
Yeah. Wow.
Tough room.
They're turning ugly, if that were possible. But anyway, so Shanaz, you have become quite the expert. On family law.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about some of your experiences and what particular issues do you find to be the most challenging in family law?
I think the issues that are most challenging are any issues that deal with children. I find that, you know, whether it be a divorce or whether it be a change in placement issue, a child support issue,
it's hard when your client or, you know, the other party tries to use children to get what they want.
Let's take a quick call. Hello, caller. You are on the Cabranes Law Hour. How you doing? Good afternoon.
Fine.
You have a question for us?
Yes. I have a question. This sort of a new law about companion animals. If a person is required to have, you know, an animal staying with you, is there going to be an extra charge for rental?
Okay, so we're going back to rental. A little off track, but okay, take a crack at it, attorneys.
Well, is it a service dog or a service animal?
Yeah, it's a dog.
A service animal?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Basically
companion, not so much what you'd call service, but it's certified by the by a doctor, and you know, she's got a license for it and everything.
Okay. Well, I will tell you that a lot of those not service dogs, but certified companion animals have come under scrutiny over the last couple of years because
a lot on the airlines,
especially on the airlines.
Yeah,
yeah, because people want to bring them into the main cabin, and they have they produce letters from doctors saying that if I'm separated from my animal, it'll cause some type of emotional reaction. And so airlines have really cracked down on those things, and there have been a lot of laws that have started popping up right and left about companion animals, which are different than service dogs. Service dogs are covered under the Americans with Disability Act,
mm-hmm.
And so there are very strong federal regulations for service dogs. You're hitting me with a question on companion animals. That I'm really unable to answer right now. And the reason I'm unable to answer it is because I am aware that there is a new law. I have yet to actually have to encounter a situation where I've had to actually deal with it. And usually what happens when you go to a lawyer, this will be a shocker to everybody who's ever used a lawyer. but when you go see a lawyer, the lawyers, unless it's something that they handle on a regular basis, will generally either do the research themselves or assign somebody to do the research so that they can get up to speed on that particular issue. And since I haven't dealt with that issue yet, I haven't had to come face-to-face with any issues surrounding that companion animal, I wish I could give you a straight answer on that, but I guess I'd need to know what exactly is the issue that you're bringing up, because it may, I may have dealt with it in another way. What exactly is the issue?
Well, it doesn't affect me. I'm calling for my in place of my daughter, but just to that it might be something in her favor as far as, you know, not having to pay extra money for an animal.
So is she running into a snag in a rental situation where she's not supposed to have pets, but she has a service animal?
No, it isn't affecting her right now, but she's going to be moving into this new place in about a week, I guess. And I just want to know what the laws might do on that.
Well, unless there's something new that's come out just recently, landlords can charge a pet deposit, and basically it ensures that the animal, you know, is not messing up the apartment or the house or the property.
Right.
You know, that's done. Now, unless she has, you know, unless the animal is a service dog. And I think service dogs are exempt from those kind of situations. I'm not sure that it necessarily a certified companion dog is. Now, if her situation is so extreme, if she's got a psychological condition that she needs to have that animal, it may be that she qualifies under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and then she can then. Bring a claim against them or back them off if they try to charge her extra on that. But I'm not necessarily sure that there is anything relating to companion animals in that sense in trying to avoid deposits that you would be able to claim. I could be wrong on that, but if she wants to talk to me about it, we can certainly do the research on it. Like I said, we generally give a half-hour free consultation. So if she wants to come in and talk about it, we can certainly take a look at it real quick.
I think I'll just relay this message to her.
Well, best of luck to your daughter, sir. Good luck.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
You have a good day, sir.
Says the Cabranes Law Offer, Law Hour, 634-9756, 634-WRJN. We're just starting to move into family law.
Yes.
I think you're going to say it's emotionally charged. I know where you're going.
It is very emotionally charged. You get involved. In my time at Cabranes Law, I've done a wide variety of family law cases, from divorces to child custody, child placement issues, even adoptions. And it's definitely an area where you're not just their attorney, but you're like their counselor, their therapist, their advisor. I have a hard time sometimes going home and like not trying to stop thinking about the issues that some of my clients are facing and going through. And it's hard because, unfortunately, you know, the courts can't deal with all of their issues and all of their concerns. Usually in divorce cases, in child custody cases or in child placement cases, the court's main concern is the child's well-being and whatever's in the best interest of the child. Even in when there's a divorce, they want to make sure that the children are taken care of. And it's just, it's rewarding too, though, when you get your client what they want and do what, make it so that the children are well
right.
off too. Yeah. So it's definitely one of those areas where.
Well, there's so many professions that when you get into the drama that is a family or a child or somebody that's really going through, we said during the break, the roughest time of your life, how do you just shut that off at 5 o'clock and, go out and have a cocktail and have dinner? How do you just get that out of your head? It sounds like you have a tough time with that.
I do. And then I go home and I try to talk to my husband about it. And he's like, I don't want to hear about this stuff.
It's bringing me down.
Yeah.
So that's when you have the 5 cocktails.
Yeah.
But, the truth is that, what Shanaz says is actually very true. It's really emotionally charged. And if you do some research on shootings that happen in courthouses or stabbings that happen in courthouses, or shootings in law offices and things like that, you'll find that the vast majority of them are connected to family law cases, either child custody matters or divorces or things along those lines, because one or the other party, in most cases, I mean, my first divorce ever, I still remember her. She had been married to the guy for a while. She was fed up with the guy. The day we got her divorced, we walked out of the Racine County Courthouse, and she had this huge handbag. And she reached into the handbag, and she pulled out this bottle of champagne and popped that cork right on the steps of the courthouse. And the last time I saw her, she was just happily walking down the street taking swigs out of her bottle of champagne.
Yeah. I remember hearing that for police officers, one of the most dangerous thing is a domestic situation, domestic disputes.
Sure.
You get in the middle of families that are going through issues, and logic goes out the window, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. And it's particularly dangerous for cops. And I can tell you that as a defense attorney, I've seen this time and time again. But, what happens is that a cop will come, and I haven't seen it from this standpoint, but from the end result, I usually see it. What generally happens is a cop will arrive at a domestic dispute at a house where the guy, most often it's usually the boyfriend or the husband who's, beating on his girlfriend or wife. And what will happen is, Wisconsin has a must-arrest law. If there are signs of domestic violence, they have to take the aggressor into custody. There's no discretion there.
Now, is this a physical, a scratch, a bruise, broken stuff in the house?
Broken stuff in the house.
Okay.
And so If there are signs of domestic violence, they must. It's a must arrest policy.
Whether or not the victim wants to press charges?
Whether or not. The victim has no say in.
It's a safety issue at that point.
It's a safety issue. And also, you have to understand that, you know, once the police become involved, it's really out of the hands of the victim. The police make the determination whether somebody's going to get arrested. The district attorney is going to make a determination whether somebody gets charged. The victim.
Yeah, we have a lot of clients come in telling us that they want to withdraw the domestic violence complaint. We tell them there's nothing we can do because if the DA wants to press charges, then that's what they're going
to do. We can talk to the district attorney, and that's what I was about to get into. I mean, we as a defense attorneys count a lot of times on the fact that the victims aren't going to come to court or aren't going to cooperate with prosecution because once that heat of the moment is done, and there are a lot of factors. I mean, in all honesty, it took me many years to get over some of the contempt that I originally felt for victims of domestic violence because they did nothing to help their situation, and I couldn't figure it out. Okay.
Yeah, why did they stay? Why did he stay? Why did she stay through all this?
Right, and not only that, but not only why do they stay, but then why is it that when finally the police become involved and they're trying to help you...
They're backpedaling.
They start to backpedal and create a lot of problems. Now, that's great for somebody like me, who I'm usually hired to represent the guy who's been doing the beating or who's been accused of doing the beatings. And I, you know, in probably 70%, 80% of those cases, I know that the longer that case goes for the state, the more trouble they're going to have with their victim, and the victim isn't going to show up, the victim is going to recant, the victim is going to come up with a completely separate story, which is going to just ruin their credibility. And as a defense attorney, you count on that. But, you know, as a cop, when you go into that thing originally, my investigator is an ex-Racine cop. And, you know, we've had conversations where, you know, you go into a domestic and you start to arrest a guy, and the next thing you know, the victim is jumping on your back.
Right, the one who called them.
Right, yeah. Right. And so, you know, those are all very difficult situations, and they're very emotionally charged. And, you know, it's bad enough when you have to do a divorce when there are children involved, but then you start adding layers of domestic violence, and you start, you know, and usually domestic violence usually is not the only issue that you're dealing with. There's, generally speaking, the trigger for domestic violence is usually some type of drug or alcohol abuse, you know. And then the victim, on the other hand, you know, the victim in the domestic violence case, even in the divorce, by the time they get to the divorce court, I think they're pretty much ready to be done with it.
No, they're ready to go, right.
Yeah.
It's just that early onset. One thing, though, let's go back. You said when you first started doing this, you felt kind of almost a contempt for people that got the ball rolling and didn't follow through. It sounds like that changed, though. What changed over time?
Because you know, when I first of all, I was never exposed to that when I was growing up.
Lucky.
I was lucky.
Yeah, me too.
I was lucky. Mm-hmm. I was never exposed, and I didn't understand the mindset. All I could see was the refusal to better their situation.
Right.
You know, as I have gotten older, and as I've gotten a little smarter, because we're always learning, you know, I learned that, you know, maybe she doesn't, you know, she economically she can't survive without this guy, or you know, there are other issues that are going on that make her remain silent. Maybe there are some threats that are being leveled by members of his family or things like that. And so, you know, I've come to have a lot more empathy for some of these folks because in a lot of ways, you know, they feel that they're trapped and they that have no other way out but to sort of mess up the prosecution, which, like, again, you know, I repeat, as a defense attorney, I'm all over that. Mm-hmm. You know, I have no issues with that. You know, as a human being, it's troubling. And so, you know, I don't have the same, I hard heart, I guess is the way to describe it, that I used to have with victims. It doesn't mean that, you know, you get the victim up on the stand who is going to, wants to prosecute her husband. It doesn't mean that I won't do my best to discredit that victim or to make their credibility suspect. But, you know, at least I don't have an active dislike for that person because of, a better word would be contempt.
Heart completely made of stone.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Oh, I have a heart of stone. You have to have a heart of stone as an attorney.
To some degree.
But you also have to be a human, so. It looks like we've come to the end of another exciting show.
Yeah, I did want to ask Shanaz, what do you see the most of as far as practicing law? What's the most common thing you run across?
In what area?
Well, in family law that we've been discussing.
People are just never happy no matter what they get. That's one thing that I've learned. They'll get you'll get them something that they want and they'll want more
The best,
they'll never completely be satisfied.
Yeah, the best agreements are the ones that leave everybody unsatisfied because everybody got what they needed, but they didn't get what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So
maybe we should have worked harder to put this back together ourselves.
Yeah,
rather than go to the.
You know, the best. You know, honestly, especially if you have children and you're going through a divorce, if you're reasonable with each other. You're going to the process is not going to be as unpleasant as it can be, and honestly, your children are going to come out of this in a much better situation than if they see mommy and daddy going after each other, you know, hammer
right.
and claw.
Right, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Good time to end. Thanks for coming in and doing it again, guys.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. This has been the Cabranes Law Hour, and we'll be back to do it again next Friday at 1 o'clock here on AM 1400. WRJN, it will be news time in a moment.